Welcome, everybody. It's time for another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Live from West Virginia University, this is a syndicated show that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice. With the practitioner extraordinaire himself today, Lee Silverman. Hey, Lee.
Thanks, Paul. I am Lee Silverman, and our topic today is getting the full benefit out of your customer research data. Customer experience has become an intrinsic element of every product and service. Data gathered from user research can inform the design process and provide insights to help teams evaluate the quality of the customer experience once the product goes live. In parallel, the formalization of roles associated with data science and advances in technology that enable advanced analytics have created opportunities for data-driven product design strategies. Today, we will discuss the alignment of these efforts, user research and analytics, and look at these from a systemic point of view that spans the product lifecycle. We'll also talk about insights gathered from implementation experiences that show practical ways to manage customer data to get the most out of what you collect and retain. Joining us in a moment is our guest, Molly Gilmore. Molly is the owner of Blue Jeans Media, which is a New York City-based consulting business focusing on user experience design and product development. Her professional background includes more than 20 years in software product design at companies including Microsoft, Intuit, and Hyperion Software, and usability research at Scripps Networks Interactive. She has a master's in bioinformatics, a master's in engineering management, and a graduate certificate in software engineering. Molly's recent endeavors include data mining applications and visual design at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine Epidemiology Informatics Department and application and database design at the Research Institute for Fragrance Materials. Molly, I have to say that's a pretty fantastic resume. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me to speak with you and your audience today to discuss these topics. I have been really lucky to have had the opportunity to work at some great companies who have put a lot of, and they put a lot of focus on user research and customer outreach. So I saw firsthand how UX and research can help create great products and successful, great products that are successful in the marketplace.
Well, you're incredibly qualified to speak to these topics, to say the least, and it is our pleasure to have you. Let me get right to this, and let me ask you, what are some of the guiding principles when gathering customer data?
So, to take from the introduction where you spoke about the association between user research and analytics, I just want to touch on the fact that it's not necessarily, the focus on product quality is not necessarily new, but the number of ways that customers interface with your business has expanded greatly with technology. And the amount of data that companies can gather about customers and their experience has also increased. So, given the importance of this data, and the potential amount of data you can acquire, it is helpful to have a few guidelines to help you manage this data. So throughout the discussion, there are two points that I keep returning to, or will return to. The first is that you need to, or it's recommended that you define what decisions you are trying to make before you begin your research effort. In other words, identify what questions are going to lead down the path to getting that data, and so that you'll feel confident that you're going to have the information you need to support your decisions. The second point is a practical point, which is look and think about how the data you gather will be stored and how people are going to be able to retrieve that data and relate that data to data that's acquired later on in the product life cycle. You know, and as an example of this, consider an e-commerce site. You may have customer data gathered during initial product design efforts, and then once you go live with the site, web analytic data will be captured that provides insight into customer behavior, you know, whether or not they actually, you know, register with your site or completed a sale. And then when you think about what benefits you can derive by connecting these two sets of data, you know, early user research and then data gathered from analytics after the product go live, think about how you can join these two sets of data to get a meaningful view of your customer. And this gets back to some fundamental questions as you ask about working with any data. What are the categories of data that are recognizable and meaningful in your organization? You know, if you have a strong user experience influence in your organization, things like the names of persona are going to be recognizable. You know, what is it that's going to enable people in your team and organization to absorb the data and benefit the data and find the data, you know, once it's been acquired?
Okay, and this really sounds to me like you need to walk into this with an end-to-end approach, not just start off willy-nilly, if I could say that, but really start to think about what you're gathering, why, how it's going to be stored, how it's going to be used later. Is that some of the idea?
That's exactly the idea. But the one thing I want to also highlight is that it doesn't need to be a significant engineering process. Although there are organizations that have very sophisticated technology already set up to do this, it can be as simple as asking yourself, once I have the data, how is somebody else who wasn't involved in the research process going to find it? And I'll talk later on in the discussion as well, but there's techniques I use to help plan and map that data acquisition strategy. And I think sometimes it's helpful to have a tangible example. So one thing I could say is, let's say you're interviewing a customer and you've outlined a set of questions you're going to ask. You know, it may be that you're gathering the data on a spreadsheet. So you have, you know, one column with a question. You'd want to maintain the question so that user know, the people reading your research later on, knows why the customer responded a certain way. You want to maintain the customer response. And then you may have some demographic information that describes that customer that may be meaningful to people doing market research. So you may have one spreadsheet that has information about a customer and their responses. Then if you're in a tool, even in something, say a spreadsheet, and then maybe you have Tableau or another open source data analytics tools, you can load those spreadsheets in and perhaps match that persona name or customer demographics to data that you acquired from market research. So it's not only just thinking a little bit ahead about how you organize the data, it might also include, you know, talking with users of your research data to see how they might benefit from it in an easy way.
Okay, and that really sounds kind of like a great programming practice that I've always been told, which is document what you're doing for others who might not have been there firsthand in talking about the demographics, as you mentioned, for these customers and someone else who wasn't involved in that process, how they can utilize this later. So let me ask you with that, because you mentioned it didn't have to be necessarily all that complicated to get started and a huge engineering feat. What's a good place to start to build your repository of customer data?
What I like to do is, since this, you know, in parallel, this is about user research, is I like to think about the typical milestones in that user researchers work through in parallel with the UX designer. Sometimes they're one and the same. And then from each of those, map the data acquired to other milestones in the product development lifecycle, as well as market research and analytics that happen once you go live. So in many organizations, the first thing, you know, there may be market research or business intelligence that gives support to the development of a new product or feature. But one place that many UX researchers and designers start with is the definition of a persona. So, you know, a persona is a prototypical customer. So a lot of times you'll start interviewing typical users or customers, and from that you can identify representative customers that's easier to absorb, and you can depersonalize it. You don't want, you know, privacy of data issues, et cetera. But it becomes a representative of who you're designing for. And the great thing about personas is that they're associated with the emotions of the customer, their expectations and goals for your product, and sometimes So you have the definition of persona, the underlying data that you gather to form those personas, which may be quantitative. And then you may have other types of documents like empathy maps that highlight the emotional aspect and can convey, you know, a three-dimensional person to other members of your organization, and also convey design intent. What are you driving towards? What are you trying to solve and anticipate for the customer? So in thinking about this first step, you have three different types of data. You have quantitative data, maybe a range of income demographics that underlie the formation of your persona. You have a persona, and then you have documents like an empathy map. And so how do you store that disparate types of data? And so this is where, you know, the great thing about all the advances in technology is you have lots of options that aren't expensive. So you may have Excel spreadsheets that could be easily transformed into an open source or a relational database. You have document management systems where you can upload the data. And here's where it takes to, you know, it's, but to think about it, separated from the user research, someone has access to that document management system. How are they going to find that data about the persona? So that's when you think, again, it can be simple. Do you have a dictionary of personas, you know, that where they would find the persona, you know, information about them, and then key terms. And then those can be metadata, either keywords in a document management system, or if you're a little bit more sophisticated, you have things like NoSQL databases that let you store unstructured or different, you know, unstructured data with metadata so it can be easily found. The one note I will add to this is that it's also important to think about the longevity of your data and what the balance of resources that you have available to dedicate to building a customer insight database versus resources that are dedicated to the actual product development team. And like I said, there's technology out there to help you change within that range of complexity. And, you know, you may have research data that is current for the roadmap for the year. So you may get data that about a feature that's not implemented in the first release, but is going to be implemented 6 months later. You would want to think about how information from the user captured 6 months earlier can be found once the development and design team is ready to move towards the realization of that feature. And then one last point about the beauty of technology is with machine learning, which is an important topic these days. You know, for those types of things, longevity and history of data may be more relevant to training data sets. So again, it's a conversation with other members of your organization on how to make best use of that data.
Okay, and it sounds like I hadn't heard persona said that way before, which is fascinating. You are getting these characteristics of these folks and, in a sense, depersonalizing it, but still having it. And beyond that, there's quite a bit of interesting things there you mentioned about the emotion side and measuring that. And we've only got maybe another moment before we have to go to break. And we can come back and continue to talk about that. But is there anything else you wanted to add? And do you think I'm understanding the persona type idea?
Well, when I said depersonalize, I mean taking specific identifiable data away. But the benefit of a persona is it creates a real life, it communicates more than just quantitative data about the person. So when designing a feature, and, you know, in my class I give an example of somebody that's building a pet sitting site. So when you think about, oh, somebody wants to hire someone to watch their dog while they're on vacation. But in a persona, you're going to think about, well, this is maybe the mother of three children and they have a family pet who's almost important as their children. You know, they care about them. So all of a sudden, safety, you know, is this person going to be safe? And one of their needs is to, you know, the priority is to understand that their pet is going to be extremely well taken care of. And how are they going to know that? So all of a sudden, by building this persona, you start to see the full picture and satisfy only not just the, you know, one need, which is to hire a sitter, but these other needs, which is I need to feel safe, I need to be informed. So that's really the great thing about a persona. And as you mentioned, it's a great tool to, you know, that inspiration you get from the customer by talking to them to share that with the rest of the organization.
Well, that clarifies it beautifully with that example. Let's take a break. We'll continue with that when we come back. And Paul, back to you, sir.
And just a quick shout out to remind you that, as we all know, marketing is more than ads and press releases, really. Marketing's more about building relationships, we're talking about today. Connecting with other marketing professionals can be a big part of that as well. And there's a place you can do that at West Virginia University's upcoming Integrate Conference, being held in Morgantown, West Virginia, right smack dab in the middle of first week of August, August 1st through 4th. Network and learn from industry leaders. Speakers representing large and innovative organizations will be there, like Cisco and Facebook, as well as agencies like Cappuccino and Fujikata. You can register today. It's pretty simple. And be part of the Integrate Conference in Morgantown, West Virginia this summer. Just register at integrate.wvu for West Virginia University, integrate.wvu.edu. And after you do that, you might want to check out West Virginia University's online data marketing communications program, the people who put this show on every week. It's the first graduate program to focus on data's impact on marketing communications. You can learn through them innovative strategies from award-winning faculty as you shape the future of marketing. Imagine being part of that. Learn more at DMC for data marketing communications at, I'm sorry, let's get it right, dmc.wvu.edu. Lots of letters that all spell out Data Marketing Communications, West Virginia University. dmc.wvu.edu. I don't know, Lise. One of these days I'll figure out how to read nine letters in a row without stumbling over it here.
I think you'll get it down to a science, my friend. So welcome back, everyone. Our topic today, again, is getting the full benefit out of your customer research data. And our special guest is Molly Gilmore. We've been talking with Molly most recently about the idea of personas. We talked about a little bit about measuring emotion. And Molly, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about that. Technical advances have enabled the acquisition of other types of customer behavior, such as eye tracking and also measuring emotion. How is this type of data managed?
So there have been so many advances in technology that make things like eye tracking software accessible to usability testers. And eye tracking software tracks gaze, and then they'll measure something like fixation, is when someone's gaze at a page lasts passes a certain threshold. And that either indicates interest or it can perhaps indicate confusion or frustration. They can't figure something out. And these tools do a great job. They generate heat maps and other visualizations. But, a lot of times each one of these tools is one component of your user research and usability testing. So for these types of situations, what I tend to do is I'm a little bit more precise about this, is definitely document the full set of steps that make up the test, what, why, and how. And then I'm pretty precise in recording the unit of scale, the unit of measure, what it is that they're measuring, what were the interpretations of the data. And I do this because it's not guaranteed that every tool that you use, even if they're performing the same type of task, is going to give you the data in the same format. And since it is, measuring physiological responses to things, that you do want to be a little bit more scientific about it so that you can feel confident that you've interpreted it, the data, especially when comparing across tools. And just on that point, there's a lot of research as well that's trying to use biometric data to gauge emotion. And again, I think more and more they're getting more and more accurate, and things like that are, can you tell from the way that someone's eyes dilate whether or not they're happy or frustrated, etc. And the last time I looked, it's still not always 100%, but it's definitely something to keep track of because they're getting more and more sophisticated.
Okay, and let me ask you, as we've talked about the measuring of these behavioral characteristics and the idea of measuring the eye movements and everything, to me is just fascinating, but what about aligning the early research data with customer behavior data, gathered once the product has been released?
So if we go back to some of the typical milestones when designing a product, you have a persona, and that persona may lead into a user scenario, which outlines, you know, the steps that a customer is going to take for a specific task. And then you may have usability testing that tests the implementation of the interface to complete that user story. And you may want to recruit testers based on those personas, because the design, there may be nuances to that that are specific to a certain persona, or things about this persona that the design was intent on satisfying. So you have that sense. And then once you go live with the product, with analytics, you may want to track metrics based on audience and segmentation that is created by looking at those initial personas. So how you divide the audience based on the feature and the person using that particular feature. And then it's a circle. It's a circular type of data flow. So, you know, sometimes there's something called A/B testing, where you're testing a specific feature or a unique change in a web page, and you see how users, either randomly or divided up without based on, you know, sequentially, how they respond to that particular change. And you can then get a sense of whether or not it's successful. And then sometimes people use that testing to then feedback into better refine their persona. So, you know, the data flow doesn't, it's linear, but then it circles back around. And the nature of product development is always iterative, and there's always a time to design and then improve. The other aspect from, you know, thinking about user research is that once you get that data back, you know, how well did the people's personas behave as expected? Was the feature designed? It helps you calibrate your own methodology and success in gathering data and interpreting that data. You know, one other example of that is, let's say that in user research, you realize that different people in different geographic locations refer to something, a product, in different terminology. So that can definitely feed into some type of customization or recommendation system to say, when they look for a product with a certain search term, I'm going to interpret that or customize the content back. And then the feedback loop to come back and say, okay, well, how well did I interpret that expectation of how customers are going to search, or even raise the flag that we do need to build this into the logic with the personalization algorithm to take into consideration the different terminologies that people use based on their location.
Okay, so the personas is feeding into a segmentation type effect, and we can do test groups and these sorts of things. And let me ask you, we only have about another minute or two remaining in the show, and this has all been wonderful, but in that time remaining, what are some of the other benefits of aligning user research and data analytics that you might share?
So I think there's two things I'd like to point out. One is when you get analytic data back from customer activity and behavior. So, for example, you see in your analytics that people aren't registering, they're not converting, they're not following through from a multi-step process to actually find a product they want and make the purchase. That will tell you what the customer did, but it doesn't tell you why. So this is one really strong association and beneficial association between analytics at the, you know, once the product is live, as well as, you know, user research that tells you the why, because the why is going to give you the insight you need to actually improve the design. And then the last thing I want to talk about is that in today's environment, the customer journey touches multiple touch points, multiple interfaces spanning multiple technologies. And so it's really important to take a holistic look at that. And one thing I recommend for that is, you know, there's something called the customer journey map. There's lots of information out on the web about that. But I use that and as a way to map out my data collection strategy, as well as, you know, once the intent of the customer journey map is done. I also use that because it's a good guidepost of where the customer is going to interact and perhaps what type of data you can gather and then how you're going to match that up.
That is excellent. Molly, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing all your expertise.
Thank you again for having me. I really enjoyed it.
You bet. We'll hope to have you back again sometime. On behalf of the West Virginia University Reed College of Media, thanks very much to all of our listeners. We hope you got some great information out of today's podcast. Paul, back to you.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a bi-weekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.